Do you remember what you were doing back in March 2011? I'll give you a hint. It's when the Nintendo 3DS was launched in the United States and Europe and Australia and other places. It's also when the Syrian Civil War started, and it hasn't stopped yet. In 7 years, well over 100,000 civilians have been killed, including women, children, and the elderly. Over half of Syria's doctors have fled, and thanks to the Assad government's policy restricting access to health services in unsympathetic areas, once rare infectious diseases have spread rapidly, mostly affecting very young children. This includes typhoid, tuberculosis, diphtheria, and polio. If you're listening to this and thinking, oh my god, how is that still happening? Text the words GIVE SYRIA to 80100 and you'll donate $10 to the Syrian Refugee Relief Fund. This only works for U.S. mobile phones, but if you're an international listener or you'd like to donate in other ways, you should go to globalgiving.org and learn how you can help. Text the words GIVE SYRIA to 80100 and donate $10 or visit globalgiving.org.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, and lay maintain with a course saving the colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor, thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as to Tanga, Cal and Bobinator, Hooker, Hart, and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Taking a bath in the middle of the battlefield. That cool.
Hello and welcome back, friends, listeners, fans. I always feel weird when I say like we have fans, but we must, because people
We've
listen to the show.
At least three, because when we talked to them, they're like, hi. And then we lost our fan, right? That's what happened.
Yeah.
We had a fan, and then he said, you betrayed me, and I'm never listening again. So we had a fan. We may not have a fan anymore.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the rest of y'all are like hate listening or whatever. But hey, that's good, because for this episode, we're going to be talking about a game called Chulip.
That's the Chulip. Onomatopoeia.
Chew being the Japanese noise for like kiss. Right.
Also, like, mm-hmm. And then they put lip at the end of the word, too. That's great. It's like a double pun.
So it's like tulip and chulip. And
yeah,
you got to use your lips to kiss. And
yeah.
You will be hearing from my lawyer, sir.
Yes, you should in this
game. So this game was nominated by Godiva Syndrome and developed by, I don't know, and published by whatever, because nobody filled it in.
Oh, well, it was developed by Lovdelic. That's the name of the company, Lovdelic. I don't know who published it, but it was by Lovdelic. They, it wasn't Lovdelic. It was the follow-up to Lovdelic. Sorry, everyone. I was slightly wrong. Was it Chameleon? I know that we've got another game.
The developer was Punchline.
Punchline!
And it was published by Natsume in North America and by Victor Interactive Software in Japan.
In that list there, do you happen to have the main creative? Because he is, one of the main people in Lovdelic, and he founded Punchline and then made this game. That's the,
Imagine if this was your, like, dream. I'm gonna make a game called
Well, do you want to know about, because I mean, you probably could read.
Well, we're gonna have to we got to finish introducing the game, and then we'll have to introduce ourselves. The director was Yoshiro Kumura.
Thanks, Kumura.
Okay, yeah, thank you. so it was first released in Japan on October 3rd, 2002, and released in North America on February 13th, 2007, which means for like 5 years, you know, or 4.5 years, you know, the fans were just clamoring for this.
This was a GameStop, is it? GameStop exclusive. It was only sold in GameStops in the US.
I thought it was a Blockbuster thing.
No, that's Clay Fighter 63 and a third.
Okay.
No, I'm pretty...
With me to talk about Tulip.
I'm Carl.
And I'm Word on the Wind.
No,
hey, welcome back, everyone.
If you wanted to, you could buy it from GameSpot. GameStop, sorry. We don't have GameStops in Australia, so it's really difficult for me to say GameStop when there is a website called GameSpot.
GameSpot.
And yeah. I've That's got that. Funny. It was very confusing. But
this is... I didn't know it was like a GameStop. Now you're going to have me doing it.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely exclusive to one, you know, major video game outlet retailer in America, and I thought it was GameStop. I'm not American, so why would I really know which store? What is a real store and what is some fake store in a video game? I wouldn't know.
Okay, so...
Might have been EB Games, for all I know. Isn't that the same company at this point?
EB was assimilated by GameStop.
Yeah, so I don't know when that... Yeah. So, yeah, it wasn't even... It didn't get, like, a full general retail either. It took 4 years to get translated, and they really got it out there to the adoring public. Incidentally, the game itself was received a lukewarm reception in Japan as well, so really confusing to basically take a game nobody asked for, release it in a market that has historically not been receptive to quirky Japanese games. Maybe, like, Katamari came out, and they were like, maybe they'll like the kissing game. Let's put that one out. Like,
well, I mean, what I've heard is that this Kimura character here had the idea for the whole game was visiting, like, I don't know whether it was Europe or the United States.
It was Europe.
And saw a lot of public displays of affection, of couples kissing in public, which is something that you don't really see much in Japan, which is true. In fact, you don't really see much displays of affection, period.
I think the best way to indicate it is like a lot of the time couples, the way they walk is the dude walks slightly in front and the lady just walks slightly behind in the sort of pairing that they have there. That's the traditional direction they're coming from. That's it's not common now.
I don't think you see that much. But you'll see even hand holding is not unusual, but it's not like as I don't know. I can't say this because
kissing in Japan is apparently potentially even an import. It was just not a thing, really, according to historians. I don't know. Don't question it.
What they did before is they just rubbed their foreheads together vigorously.
Well, the way it works is there's no, as far as I know, there's very little. You know, obviously you've got a lot of historical records and art and writings, and the actual kiss doesn't really show up in them very often or as a thing, and the actual Japanese common use word is kissu, which is just katakana. Right. They don't have a traditional, I think they have one outdated kanji set for it, but it's not used. They basically only use the Western term,
or the onomatopoeia for the, you know, the chew.
Yeah.
As you can tell by this history lesson, this game is thrilling to talk about.
Well, we're,
you gotta establish this game because it's an unusual game because it is a game where you set in, is it set in like the 50s or the 60s? It's not supposed to be set in like the modern time of when the game came out. That's pretty, you know, there are rotary phones.
I don't know about that. All I know is that my favorite way I've heard of describing this game is that it's violently Japanese.
But the odd thing is, I think that the creator really, really wanted it to go outside of Japan. And so, the idea is, the creator really wanted it to be localized, which is maybe one of the reasons why it did make it over here, because it was just like, no, this is going to be localized. People are going to see this, because I want everybody to maybe... Maybe the thinking was I found other people's Japanese people often, especially those who travel, which is not unusual. They are genuinely fascinated by other. They don't they may find other countries a little bit odd to them, just like anybody would, but it's like there's more of like a fascination to it, like a genuine fascination. And if you watch TV on any like normal evening, a large number of shows will be like kind of like slice of life shows from like other parts of the world and stuff like that. Like
a lot of the shows are just also people running around Tokyo with cameras. Not
well, yeah. There's also the ever-present genre of a lady who goes around, eats things, and then the people in the corner talk about her eating the thing.
Oishi.
Yeah. I don't – that part it doesn't seem weird to me anymore, but when you think about it that way, it's really kind of weird. But anyway, it's not. It's basically just like having a commentary section on like your standard.
No, it's literally Guy Fieri type like show, a Let's right? Play, but life. Like it's just people Let's Playing MST3K over someone just doing stuff.
So like, I think it's also just like of what's funny is like it's they'd rather have funny people commenting on the stuff that's happening, and then the not funny person being the one who's doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, not always. There's also shows where it's like a funny person doing stuff and making funny jokes and things.
And then there's funny people watching the funny person making comments.
And I always hilarity, love shows that... it's just like compound interest of laughs.
I love the ones that cut to like a full audience of comedians. That's one of my favorite, you know, like where it's the show and then they cut and there's like this giant panel of comedians who are all shouting at the same time. It's crazy, those shows. They're like, what is the point of any of this? So the kids anyway, game,
I think that there's like a certain level of intentional Japanese-ness because the creator always intended it to be localized. And they thought people would really enjoy that. Because yeah. I think this person is a loon. I think this the Tulip creator might
Very much of this game, it's difficult to tell what is sincere and what is them being funny, because I'm not great at picking Japanese humor. You know, obviously when it's really blatantly obvious and everyone's slapping their thighs and stuff, I'm like, okay, I guess that's supposed to be funny. But, like, the comedic subtle sensibilities of Japanese comedy obviously elude me because I don't have any history in Japan, really. So this game is quite odd, and it's often, I think, hard to tell whether it's being surreal, whether it's being funny. And some parts of it feel really, like, biting, like, satire or, like, social commentary on aspects of Japanese culture occasionally. One that immediately stood out to me is, like, there's the giant, power cable telephone pole guy. And literally the first thing he says, he just sort of looks at the camera and says, "You should pay your workers," and then just, like, walks out of the screen, basically. I'm just like, oh, okay, fair enough. That seems like a good thing to do. And there's like an ongoing thread in the game where like they're basically a string of people aren't getting paid and they're all on strike. And it's like, yes, that seems fair enough.
Word, how would you describe the gameplay? Like, what would you say? What kind of, if you had to describe what kind of game is Tulip, like, how would you do it?
If I had to summarize it to an extremely oversimplified genre, it would be adventure game. If I were to expand on that, I would call it a sexual harassment game.
Yeah,
the way some of us play adventure games were
adventure games. It's like
hey, you asked.
I mean, no, but, I think
so. My reasoning here is the core of this game is you're some dude who just moved into town, as if you were like a Pokemon protagonist with your one parent, and you see a girl. You want to kiss the girl because you're experiencing love at first sight. And you're then told your kissing game is weak. You got to get better at it. So you got to kiss like 40 different people, animals, entities, aliens, and other weird shit to practice kissing a woman. And to do that, you need to just go through all kinds of weird situations, including looking through a trash can and pulling out turds. Which
don't
hurts
pull out
you,
the turd,
I might add.
Could accidentally
which is,
get killed.
As we all know,
they will kill
exactly
you.
Where you put your turds.
Yeah, finding feces will kill you in this game. I am not joking.
We will get to that aspect of the critical problems with the game.
Oh boy, howdy, will we.
Yes!
But yeah, that's basically the core of the game, is you go around kissing whatever you can to stop sucking at kissing, which is...
But the adventure game aspect that comes in is twofold here, because firstly, many of them you have to solve in a somewhat more conventional adventure game fashion, like some string of puzzles, you know, either you manipulate some inventory objects, you do, like, trading, you know, like, what do you call them?
Or you get clues, and you have to solve, like, you know, some sequence, which is one of the more infamous ones, such as how to properly take a bath in a bathhouse.
That's an important thing to know.
Yeah.
There's a procedure.
There's a procedure, and it has nothing to do with actually cleaning yourself, apparently.
And the other thing is that it's actually like Majora's Mask, or like Gothic or something. It has a day-night cycle. Yeah, everyone follows their own separate schedules, and some characters will tell you what they're doing, other characters will not, which becomes frustrating. Because often you have to meet a certain character in a certain place. This is where the surrealism comes in. There are little holes all over the ground that you can look into, like some sort of insane Junji Ito sort of protagonist, like, ooh, I'm just gonna look in this hole. This is not gonna go wrong at all. It's perfectly fine. Look in holes, kids. You'll see like a little, like, weird surreal apartment, like The Room, actually, the Silent Hill game. And you'll have, like, weird characters in there, like koalas and snipers and Godzilla and all these things. And some of them will say, at 3 a.m., I'm going to jump out of here and stomp around. And if you're there at 3 a.m., they will do that. And you got to sneak up to them and you got to stealth kiss them, because that's what normal people do. And then they are defeated. And that's, you have to do this because, yeah, you have to level up your heart or your ability to love or something. It's a... Yeah.
Your kissing game.
Well, I mean, the game has some weird, like, again, like, where I'm not sure how serious it is.
I think romanticism is the correct phrase here.
But yeah, so, like, you've got to build up your ability. You got to work your way up to the regular girl who ran away from home. That's what you got to get there. It can be quite a pain in the ass, because the game will about...
Yeah, you wouldn't think a game... like this would involve too many game over scenarios, but
it is extremely easy to die to feces in this game.
It's extremely easy to die in this game, which is interesting, because I think that that's somewhat fair with your sexual harassment adventures, but
Yeah, really, it should just be like you go to jail or something.
Like, you know, it's actually not too dissimilar, because Leisure Suit Larry, like, died a lot in his sexual harassment game. He get in a lot of trouble. Can't you, like,
To be clear, though, this game is not Leisure Suit Larry. Like,
No. It is more, I think it's supposed to be deliberately somewhat off-putting on the basis that the creator himself was making it in response to going to Europe and being like, why, people just do that outside?
I don't think it was like a shock or disgust. I think it was just like something that made him reflect on the differences, like things you wouldn't take for granted, right? Like, we don't take for, like, you know, depending on where you live, like, I mean, and, you know, like, depending on where you are in Europe, like, you know, you could get kissed just out of nowhere.
Yeah, like hello, kiss on the cheek. Like,
it's a lot more. Yeah, it's like this. It's not always consensual.
No.
Like, if you're a woman and you have to ride the bus, God help you, because in Italy, at least,
and the game
doesn't deal with any of that stuff.
No, not even.
It's like the idea is like the kid wants to become like a good kisser, which I don't really. I hate to break this to those who are curious, but I don't really think that's much of a thing. I don't think there's that much to it. The main thing is to find somebody who wants you to kiss them, and
yeah,
you'll probably do okay.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, your character is building up his chemistry, so we start but with onion women and, like, trash can man. You know, once you can get through those,
well, you gotta learn by experience, right? Like, you gotta like this hobo.
I thought that might have been part of it. Like, you know. There is an aspect where, you know, Japanese culture, you know, a lot of people are supposed to romanticize your first love, and that's true in Western society as well. You know, there's a lot of, like, first love romance, you know, like, this is, you know, that's the pure stuff. I don't know if this is supposed to be, like, a little bit of a, you know, actually, what you should do is have some life experience before you actually, you know, try and stick the landing, But
yes, well, that's what this game is all about, is gaining that life experience by, like, smooching trash can people, and
running through bathhouses,
poking your heads in holes, and, like, taking, like having like, you know, hostile takeovers of major corporations. And
you can go down the slide and die, which is one of my favorite parts of the game.
We should probably tell the audience how you save in this game.
You go to the shitter.
Why? I don't.
You go
place from the fecal matter.
You wash your hands. It's good.
Yeah. Is there anything else we need to say about Julep before we rank it? Because it's like, I kind of feel like maybe like giving the listeners some of the highlights, because people are not going to play this game. And it's
the lowlights of the game is that I believe the Western version came with a walkthrough guide in the manual. This was the level of concern that the team who brought it to the US was like, they're going to need a guide. This is monstrous.
I think that's fine. I think it's fine. I think they're just recognizing what it is. It's like, oh, people are going to hate this unless we like. It's like the point of the game is to just go check things out, experience things, have funny stuff happen, and just like explore the little bizarre.
That's my biggest problem with it, though. Half the things you stick your head in, you'll get it bitten off, right? Like, you have a health bar. It goes down really quickly because most things will do most of your health and damage, if not all of it. So it's a game where you're supposed to poke around and you're supposed to look at things, but it's a game where if you walk up to the cop, he shoots you in the face like, Harvester, you know, like you just walk up to the cop and he just unloads on you and you're like, oh, cool, game over, nice, glad I
changed. Thanks for that, buddy.
Bandit, get him!
Yeah! Like, 30 minutes?
Shoot him in the lips so he can't smooch anyone else! Disarm him!
The character's lips, when he goes in for that smooch,
oh man,
they go into the full choo-choo.
Oh yeah,
choo-choo.
Yeah, this game has a very stylized art style, and like everything is like super deformed, which means big heads, which means really big lips.
Can I point out though, this is one of the rarer games where that means that the lady characters as well are quite off-putting and weird most of the time. You know, like, usually when you have the super deformed style, often it'll have, like, all the dudes will be like, like, melty faces, but the ladies will be okay to decent, good-looking, kind of, whereas this one was like, nah, everyone should be weird. Like, just really weird. You don't know. Only, I think, the love interest has, like, a, like, quite cute, like, look to her.
Yeah.
That's kind of intentional, I think.
My favorite thing about this, that I learned about this, was that apparently the creator also like envisioned a sequel that would take place in the Bronx. I mean, which would be fine. I mean, people smooch in the Bronx, right? I mean, it's just like anywhere else. But it's just like, the Bronx is not like a... I just want to see what this guy would end up doing with that. Because it's just like...
How does one interpret this?
It's just like, what, I don't think it was like anything, you know, like, I think he was just like, he was just trying to think of like a fun place,
like
South Bronx, where it's like, no, I think it was just like, it's, his idea is like, oh, you could do this kind of game anywhere. It works on every level, you know, like you can, the obliviousness is charming here.
Yes.
Because clearly, because to me, like, if the point of the game is to, like, go explore and, like, see cute little things and do funny little things and have funny stuff happen and go on little silly adventures and build up your smoochometer or whatever it is, that's great. Don't punish the player for doing the stuff that is required to find those cute things. Like, that's
Can I mention, because I love the game over screen in this. You'll see it a lot, but it's very funny, and it made me laugh a lot the first time it comes up. Your character dies, it fades to black as you do, your character's lying, you know, prone on the ground, I'm dead, and then the telephone pole guy runs in and kicks him in the ribs and then runs off.
Fuck you!
It's so funny. He just runs in, smack, and then runs off.
Hey, look, it's a dead kid!
And it encapsulates the game so much to me that it's like, that was funny and clever, and also I have to do the game again, damn it! Like,
yeah,
I wish it was, like, less... It seems to be, like, intentionally cruel, and I don't really know why. Like, what was the goal?
It's definitely intentionally cruel, because it's like, okay, your player kid moves into, you know, this town, and it's like, oh, hey, go around and meet the neighbors, and... Everyone laughs at how poor you are. they're not exactly living the life of Riley over there.
No, you moved to a poor town, essentially. Like, you've moved from the big city to the poorer town. That's what your intro yeah. is. And everyone's and sticking just, it to you.
It's just like, oh, you're poor. Ha 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 ha. Like, actual dialogue.
I also really like that your father never sleeps at night because he's so stressed about your life situation. Like, you have the father character just reads the newspaper all day, every day, and all night, and is just like, gonna see if my son didn't screw up today. Oh, no. It's great. I like that.
This is the same father who, by the way, gave you the advice to smooch as many people as you can find. Yeah. As you can get your lips on.
Yeah.
That will be the way that you prove
you your... You confess that, like, the girl that you meet is like, I think, she, like, I saw her in my dream. She's really beautiful. I think I'm in love. And he's like, you know what you should do, son? Just go kiss her on the lips right now. Just go out there and stick it to her. And it's like, whoa now. Slow down. And yeah, you have to do that. It is mandatory because she has
That's
to.
That's the win condition.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to try and kiss her to progress the game. The game will not let you get out of that. She goes, whoa, what the hell, man? You're weird and poor.
Is the kid supposed to look like a monkey?
I think he's supposed to look like a Muppet.
I think it's supposed to look like a little column A, little column B.
Because you can see the leads did a lot of drawings, actually, of a lot of the characters. And yeah, basically, monkey, Muppet kid always looked like that. Like, this is totally going for it, totally intentional. It's a fun, quirky game. You did mention, before we go to ranking...
It's a quirky game. Let's not go nuts.
Well, what it does, you mentioned that it's really Japanese. I laughed quite a bit because one of the very first obstacles you run into is a crosswalk where the button doesn't work and your character will cross the road. Like, nope, I will not cross
like,
the road
yeah,
if
I
that
feel
light
like,
ain't green.
I feel like James Dean when I'm in Japan because I'm just like, people are just waiting for the crosswalk. So I'm like, look, there are no cars and I'm too cool for this. Boom, walking across. Like streets that are so narrow, you could probably jump across it if you wanted to.
Yeah, they'll wait. Like, they'll be standing there.
But they'll be standing there.
They'll look at you like, you're going to die. Like, this person is dead.
They know you're a foreigner. And like, oh, yes, they don't follow our rules, these people. But it's like, it's just not, you don't break the societal compact, you know?
That's the thing, like, that made me feel like, yeah, like, so if the society of Tulip is based on the exchange of kisses, then that's the society.
It's kind of like Pokemon, except instead of collecting and training monster slaves, you kiss people and you collect like kiss experiences.
Yeah,
and then you battle your kiss experiences against. I don't know. No, you don't. Where do we want to put this?
I don't know.
Let's put it someplace, I would like to throw out my highlight of the game.
So yeah, sure. I'm loading the list,
and that would be the basically at the end game where you basically have a within-your-own-mind experience from traveling into a cave, and there's just, like, a gigantic fucking dire cat that just quizzes you, and if you fail, it's gonna kill you. It's like, this is a cat in your mind, and it's lethal.
That's the game. Everything is lethal. It is a bit of a shame, because you want to see what happens even when you fail, because that's, like, fun. But the game is like, okay, now replay the last 20 minutes since you saved. That's what you get for trying to enjoy the game, you jackass. I'm looking at the list.
Kind of scrolling down here.
I'm scrolling down a little bit. I do think that, like, it's one that, you know, it's better than, like, bad.
Is it, like, so bad it's good?
I don't think it's so bad it's good. I think it's interesting enough to... if you front load as much of what is good about it, you go, you could tolerate the bad. It's more like you can push through it. It's also one that a guide can basically give you smooth sailing through. There's very little like physical challenge to the game.
Nobody will judge you for doing that.
This game is best experienced via Let's Play, to which I would recommend James Mann's LP on the LP archive, because that was the best sleep aid I had for 2 months. I slept great.
That is a stirring endorsement.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a devastating indictment.
No, I do legitimately recommend it for that, because it's like, it's interesting enough to hold your attention that you don't like look away at things, but there's enough downtime between interesting things that it'll just put you right to sleep. It's great.
Well, okay, so in the 260s range, we got
260. What? Got
we've got 263. We have Brave Fencer Musashi. 264. We've got Snatcher. For some reason, directly below that, we've got Chex Quest 3, which is great, I guess. And then we've got Robot Alchemaic Drive a step down at 267. You know, there's quite a few like games here that I think are at least somewhat like it in terms of.
No, these are like you're still in the territory of games that I would recommend people play. So I think
meanwhile, at 406, we've got King's Quest 5, which I'd rather play.
Well, I would definitely put it well above that.
I would put it above King's Quest 5, just in the sense that like King's Quest 5 is not the best King's Quest, really, and it's not the
King's Quest 5 isn't the best King Quest, and if you use a guide, you have no game left.
Yeah, it's just
there's nothing left. This game's like
I have a lot of nostalgia for that.
I suppose I can yield to that argument, but I think we're in the ballpark around there. I would not put this anywhere over.
So, okay, so if you go down to 320, you're looking at LSD. I
love that game.
Yeah, so that's an interesting game that could only exist in, like, the early PlayStation era. You know, like, this is a PS2.
I don't know how this one escaped that. It was
It's the PS2. I count the PS2 as being a part of that because it's, like, it was still, it cost nothing to develop these ugly-looking games. And
some of them are really expensive now.
You could publish them. Some of them are really expensive now. But, I mean, it was a lot of stuff made under the...
You want to know what he made after this? He made that Rule of Rose game, the horror game with the kids and the, like, airship and, like, lots of horror.
Oh, that one. I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, it's made a straight-up horror game after this one. Crazy. Went from this thing to just, I'm just going to make a full horror game.
There's a secret society of children that punish their own by tying a rat to a stick and shoving it in their faces.
It's an interesting one.
That wasn't a secret society. I was in that one. I was in a couple of those.
You know what? I like it more than Abzu at 330. I'm sorry, Abzu fans. I always dig into Abzu, but
it's better than Abzu. It's kind of on the Abzu range of things. It's like a game that you just kind of dip yourself into, like a pool of stuff. All right. I'll second that. I think that's where it goes. We put it above Abzu.
Abzu.
I'm amazed that it isn't below 400. I am amazed.
You know, and my main reason for that is I think that, like, there's definitely an audience out there for this. Just because I'm not it doesn't mean I can't see how people would like it.
Other than the absolutely savage, game over stuff and the nonsensical design, which you basically need a guide for, I really enjoyed the world and the presentation of the music is gorgeous. It's got so like weird like scat singing and like doo-wops and stuff.
Oh, love that's when right. Games it's all, have that. It's mostly like just voices, right?
Yeah, lots of charming stuff. There's like saxophone, like noodling in there. It's a weird. As I said, like I mentioned Katamari, and it has a little bit of that sort of just wow, this is really odd. And that to me that puts it above a lot of things.
Okay, so that's where it goes. Below Chip's Challenge, above Abzu. Thanks, everybody. And hey, look at a dead kid! Kick him in the ribs!
Get him!
He can't hurt us, he's dead! That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.